Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the program, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this program is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's program, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect telephone education workshop, Coping with Cancer Pain, What You Need to Know. And we have today, on today's program, we've collaborated with 18 other cancer organizations, and because of that collaboration, we've been able to reach so many of you. We have on the call today over 675 participants, and you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities. You come from suburban areas as well as rural and frontier communities. So really from all over the place in the United States. And we do have international participants from Australia, Canada, Guam, India, and Syria. So this is a bit of a global call as well. And we're really delighted with your response that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline that our speakers have prepared, and there's information about those 18 organizations that I mentioned. They're free resources to you, in addition to Cancer Care, that offer a host of different services that might be of use to you. Now, there also in your packets there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of our program today to really complete that evaluation form. When you think of it, who but each of you really can best tell us what your needs are, how this program met your needs, what topics you would like us to offer in the future. That's very helpful to us. This is the beginning of the new year, and we'd like to incorporate your suggestions and ideas into the programs that we are planning during 2009. So it's very helpful to get your feedback, and particularly helpful to get feedback from people who really are living the experience and really know what you need. So we value what you tell us, and we try very hard to implement it. Now, today's program was made possible by an educational grant from Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program today. And we have wonderful speakers on the program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Nessa Coyle. Dr. Coyle is a pain and palliative care service, Department of Neurology, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Dr. Coyle has spoken on many of these programs in the past and is well known for her work in this area of pain management. And she is going to start with an overview of acute, chronic, and breakthrough pain, words to describe cancer pain to your healthcare team, and barriers to pain management. Dr. Coyle?
Thank you very much, Carolyn, and also welcome to all the participants. What I'd like to do in the time that I have is talk about the different types of pain, suggest some words and strategies that may be helpful to you when you describe your pain to your physician or your nurse, and then talk about some myths which, if they're believed, can really be barriers to adequate pain management. Pain is an almost universal experience. It's designed really as an alert system in the body that something is wrong and or needs attention. Pain impulses are transmitted from various parts of the body to the brain, where they are perceived as pain. We also give pain meaning. The meaning can affect the way we respond to the pain stimulus. Chronic pain serves really no useful purpose at all and needs to be controlled. If your pain isn't treated well, as any of you who has pain at this moment as I'm talking or has had pain, you know that it can interfere with your ability to sleep, interact with family and friends, eat, walk, see life as worth living, really, and your overall quality of life and sense of well-being. It also causes stress to the body. It's considered so important to manage pain that in many hospitals now, pain is looked on as the fifth vital sign alongside blood pressure, pulse, respirations. So it's really important. And even when institutions accredit hospitals as being giving good care, they use evidence of pain assessment as one measure of good care. So what causes pain in cancer? And it can be caused by the disease itself, for example, a tumor pressing on pain-sensitive structures. It can be caused by the treatment of the cancer, and this could be, for example, postoperative pain, or if you've had chemotherapy, pain from mouth sores associated with the chemotherapy, or it can be unrelated to the cancer or its treatment, for example, arthritis or rheumatism. So one individual can have those three types of pain, pain from the tumor, pain from the treatment, and pain unrelated to the cancer or its treatment. There are different ways of classifying pain, and one of the ways is trying to understand the mechanism of pain. And classifying pain is really important for the doctor and, or nurse, because it helps by understanding the mechanism of pain to decide what's the best approach or approaches to use in managing the pain. So there'll be a lot of attention by the physician to come up with a pain diagnosis to understand what's causing the pain. The first major way of classifying pain is called nociceptive pain, and you may have heard people talk about that. Nociceptive pain is caused by activation of pain-sensitive structures, and this is divided into somatic pain, and that's caused by activating pain-sensitive structures in the cutaneous, the skin-like tissues, or deep in the musculoskeletal area. Usually this pain is well localized. You can point to the area of pain. An example of this type of pain might be bone disease, a post-surgical incision, or if you have inflammation or spasms in your muscles. So this is called somatic pain. The second type of pain within this category is visceral pain. And this results from infiltration or compression or stretching of your thoracic or abdominal viscera. For example, if someone had liver disease, the liver itself is not painful, but the capsule surrounding the liver is. So if the liver became swollen, it would stretch on that capsule and it would experience abdominal visceral pain. This pain is different from somatic pain in that it's much more poorly localized, and it's often described as deep squeezing pressure and may be associated with other symptoms like nausea. Sometimes with this type of pain also, the way you feel the pain is distant from where the actual problem is. And for example, people have shoulder pain when they've got irritation of the diaphragm or if someone's having a heart problem. The next major category of pain is nerve damage pain, neuropathic pain. And this can be a type of pain which is somewhat difficult to control. And it results from injury to the nerves in the peripheral or central nervous system. And this, again, can be caused by the disease infiltrating the nerve. It can be caused by treatment like surgical trauma, for example, after a mastectomy. Or it can be caused by chemotherapy, where some people have these tingling, numb, or painful sensations in their feet or in their hands. And again, it can be unrelated to either the cancer or its treatment, for example, diabetic neuropathy or shingles. The way this type of pain is usually described by patients is sharp, shooting, electric shock, burning, or vice-like. So when you describe your pain using those adjectives, the clinician will immediately start thinking of, I wonder if this is nerve damage pain, neuropathic pain. So really the words used to describe your pain help the clinicians to understand what's causing the pain and therefore best how to treat it. There's also a temporal pattern of pain, which is important to understand, and it falls really into three categories, acute pain, chronic pain, and breakthrough pain. With acute pain, it's usually characterized by a well-defined pattern of onset. You usually know what's causing it. For example, if you're going downstairs and you miss the bottom step and you go over on your ankle, any of you have done that, know that it's acute, severe, excruciating pain. It may be caused by a fracture or, again, post-surgical pain. Or if you have a wound that needs a dressing change, sometimes that a dressing change can be very painful with acute pain. This type of pain tends to be time-limited and responds to analgesics and, if possible and where possible, treating the cause of the pain. Acute pain is usually a signal that the body tissue is being injured, and the pain usually lessens and disappears when healing takes place. Chronic pain is different. Chronic pain is pain that persists for about 3 months or longer. And people with acute pain often look as though they're in pain, but people with chronic pain often do not look as though they have pain. and the only way that a doctor will know that you have pain is if you tell them. With chronic pain, the central nervous system adapts so that the person, again, doesn't have what's called a fight-and-flight response. They may look depressed, but when you say, how are you doing, do you have pain? They say, yes, my pain is excruciating. So you cannot tell by looking at someone if they have pain or not and the severity of their pain. Always underlying all of pain management is a recognition that the expert on the pain is the person who's experiencing it. Breakthrough pain is another type of pain which is important to understand. This is pain which occurs in the setting of chronic pain which is well controlled, but then periodically the pain becomes more severe. So there's this baseline chronic pain which is well controlled, but there are these episodes of more severe pain. This occurs in different situations. Incident pain, spontaneous pain, or pain from end-of-dose failure. And again, it's important to understand which type of breakthrough pain you're having because the management may be different. For example, breakthrough pain may be associated with movement, dressing change, or other activities. And because you know what's going to trigger this breakthrough pain, usually people are advised to take their pain medication before the event so that it can decrease these painful episodes, and I'm sure Dr. Fleischmann will be talking about this a little bit later. Patients frequently have a combination of incident pain where you know when it's going to happen so that you can take medication beforehand. Spontaneous pain is more difficult because it occurs without warning. So again, the medication you have would be prescribed to manage that type of pain needs to be quickly act and then get out of the system fast. And sometimes what you'll see is something called end-of-dose failure. And that is when, you, say, for example, you're on a medication regimen of every 8 hours and you find the pain starts coming through again on the 6th or the 7th hour, so the medication doesn't last for the full 8 hours. Again, that's important to know because the management approach would be to increase the pain medication or, if it was a 12-hour interval, to decrease the time interval, perhaps to every 8 hours. The important thing in when talking to your doctor or nurse about pain is these are the sort of questions they're going to ask you. Where is your pain? And frequently someone can have different sites of pain, so you need to identify each site of pain. And if you're in the clinic, they may give you a body chart and you just mark off where that pain is. Then the next question is, what does the pain feel like? For example, sharp, shooting, squeezing, burning. So again, the word descriptors you use to describe your pain will help the clinician to understand what's causing the pain and then arrive at a management approach. They'll ask how bad your pain is, and frequently a scale is used, 0 meaning no pain and 10 meaning the worst pain you can imagine. If you have difficulty using numbers, then you can use mild, moderate, or severe. You'll also be asked what makes the pain better or worse. So some people say the pain is worse when they're lying in bed, but better when they're standing. So that would be a question. If you're being treated for pain at the moment, you'll be asked how well the treatment is working. Are there any side effects from the pain medication? Has the nature of the pain changed? And then you'll be asked, how is this pain affecting you as a person, your quality of life, your sleep, your mood, your family life? So it's really looking at this concept of total pain, not only the tissue damage of the pain, but also it affects a whole individual, and also it affects the family. So pain is a family affair, not just the individual affair. The meaning of pain to you is really important because that can, again, affect your pain experience. So what you may be asked is, what do you think is causing the pain? What do you say to yourself when you're experiencing the pain? Who do you turn to for help? Are you able to get the help that you need? Who is there to support you? And who is there to help my family? So again, the impact of pain on you as an individual, it's really important to sort that out. What will help you to keep track of things is often if you can keep a daily log or diary with your medication schedule, your level of pain before you take the medication, and if it's by mouth, about an hour afterwards. what your average pain is at its best, at its worst, or on average throughout the day. So those three parameters, at its best, at its worst, and on average. What things other than medications you do to manage your pain, relaxation, imagery, what makes your pain worse? If you're upset, does that make your pain worse? What are you able to do? Again, any side effects of the medications that concern you, and again, Dr. Fleischmann will talk about that. Any other concerns or worries about your pain treatment? And sometimes before you go to see your clinician, write down the questions you want to ask. What I want to do now quite quickly is go over some of the myths that interfere with pain management. The first one is that pain means the cancer is growing, and it's not necessarily a sign that the cancer is getting worse at all. It can happen at any stage of the disease. It can happen as a side effect of treatment or be unrelated to the cancer, and it can certainly happen in people who have stable disease. The second myth is that focusing on pain will distract my doctor from focusing on my cancer therapy. Far from it. Often you can't tolerate cancer therapy if your pain is not well controlled, so it will actually interfere with your cancer therapy if your physician doesn't know about it and the pain isn't adequately managed. Remember also that untreated pain exhausts your body and exhausts your spirit, so it's a very negative thing. The third myth is that pain medication leads to addiction. It's extremely unusual if someone doesn't have a history of drug abuse, are using pain medication for pain, and then become psychologically dependent on these drugs. If you do have a history of drug abuse, it's important that you share that information with your doctor or nurse so that as part of the pain management approach, we take that into consideration. The fourth myth is that taking pain medication early on in the disease process or when the pain isn't very severe will mean that it won't work later on if the pain gets really bad. And that, again, is not so. It's much better to keep the pain under control. It makes it much easier to manage. If you wait until the pain is very severe, then the pain becomes much harder to control, and you end up needing more of the medication. The fifth myth is pain should be taken only when the pain starts to increase. And we said before that that's just not true. When you have pain, the pain should be managed. If it's chronic pain, you should be taking medication on an around-the-clock basis. Side effects is myth six, that people are afraid they'll get side effects from particularly the opioid drugs and they can't be controlled. Certainly side effects can happen, like some drowsiness and nausea when the drugs are first started or increased, but they usually subside after a few days. But if they're present, they can be treated, and certainly constipation needs to be treated proactively. And again, Dr. Fleischmann will talk about that. If for some reason your pain goes away, this is the seventh myth, the question sometimes, what sometimes happens is the individual stops taking the pain medication abruptly. And what happens then is you can go through a withdrawal syndrome. You feel as though you're getting flu, may have diarrhea, aching joints, excessive perspiration. And all it is that your body is physically dependent on these drugs, not addiction, not psychological dependent, and that you wean the person down slowly after the medication. And there's a very specific way of doing that. So don't abruptly stop your medication without first talking to your clinician. Remember, you're the expert on your pain. The clinician team are the people who try and sort out the causes of your pain and will work with you on arriving at a management approach. And don't assume that your doctor or nurse knows you have pain unless you tell them. And so developing a common language of how to talk about your pain is essential. And that's a 0 to 10 scale, for example, none, mild, moderate, severe. What makes it better? What makes it worse? I'll finish with a variety of ways of treating pain. If it's caused by the disease, then you try and shrink the tumor, radiation therapy, chemotherapy, or surgery. There can be analgesics or nerve blocks, relaxation, imagery, sometimes acupuncture, distraction, heat and cold, physical therapy. Remember that pain management is an integral part of cancer care. They go hand in glove. So thank you, Carolyn. I'll stop now.
Well, I would like to thank you very much, Dr. Quayle, for just an excellent, very informative, outstanding presentation. And you really covered a lot of the details and
in terms of really an understanding of pain and its management and some of the things that get in the way of getting one's pain managed. So thank you very much. I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. Our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is Director, Supportive Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, Beth Israel Medical Center, St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital. Dr. Fleischman also has been a frequent presenter on our teleconference programs, and he also is the recipient of a Cancer Care Physician of the Year Award. And he is going to cover medications to treat cancer pain, coping with side effects of pain management, including constipation, sleepiness, and nausea, and quality of life concerns. Dr. Fleischman?
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Nessa, for a wonderful start. There's a lot of information. I'll try to go smoothly, but pack it into the few minutes we have, and then we'll entertain questions, of course, later on in the program. There are a number of medicines that are used to treat cancer pain, and some of them are used to treat non-cancer pain as well, and people may have taken them in the past. And there's, as Nessa has pointed out, a lot of information out there, some of it good, some of it myths or misinformation, and we need to clarify that as much as possible. So for mild pain, Tylenol can be used, acetaminophen, known by different names in different countries. We generally think of that as a relatively safe pain medicine because it's advertised on television. It's available over the counter without a prescription. But Tylenol or acetaminophen may be one of the most toxic substances out there if people take high doses over long periods of time. It's very hard on the liver. So although the guidelines to use acetaminophen for a few days say that sometimes you could take even up to 4,000 milligrams a day, if for people who were taking it over months at a time, we'd like to be much more conservative, even down to 2,000 milligrams a day. So everybody has sort of different ceilings for that, but we try to be careful because it is so hard for the liver to digest lots of Tylenol over long periods of time. People generally are familiar with aspirin and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medicines like ibuprofen or naproxen, naproxen sodium, again, available in different countries in a variety of brand names. But those medicines during cancer treatment can be problematic because they make our platelets, the cells that clot our blood, more slippery. And when the number of platelets is reduced from chemotherapy or radiation therapy, we may be more likely to bleed. So although they may be quite useful after cancer treatment is over, for some chronic pain syndromes, for some inflammatory syndromes, during cancer treatment they have some use but very limited use and always in concert with your doctor and nurse. So we're really left with using the opioid medicines or the opiate medicines or sometimes mislabeled narcotic medicines, and that comes with a sort of a whole aura of information and misinformation. Many people are still, even in this day and age, under the impression that narcotics are really only used in the last days of life, that if your cancer treatment is going well and that you're responding to your chemotherapy and radiation and your surgery went well, that's way too strong a group of medicines to use, but in fact is really our mainstay because of the limitations with acetaminophen and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So many people have taken codeine preparations before. Codeine comes in a variety of forms. Again, varies from country to country, but a totally synthetic type, a semi-synthetic type, a more natural type. But codeine is a good pain medicine for mild to moderate pain. It has a short half-life, means that it only lasts about 3 or 4 hours at a time, so that you need to take it more often. Luckily now with the technological advances and the way we can give medicines in many countries, there's a long-acting version of oxycodone that can be given in a time-release pill, so it needs to be taken only every 12 or 8 hours, which means that you can take less medicine over the course of the day because you're getting a little bit of pain medicine all the time. You're not waiting for the pain to develop and then treating it or chasing it away, as we say. You're doing something that's much more preventive, as Nessa spoke about before. The other medicines in the opiate or opioid category, again, are much more problematic from a public relations point of view because morphine is truly a mainstay of campaign treatment, and many people, again, mistakenly believe that's just for the last days of life, or if they use it too quickly, they won't need it, won't work when they need it, or that they will become addicted to it. And as Dr. Kuo mentioned before, there are a number of myths associated with that. In many countries, the morphine can also be given intravenously, can come in a long-acting oral preparation that, again, can give somebody sort of a steady state and have medicine stay in the body for a long period of time. The point of that is, again, not chasing the pain away, but treating it with a small amount of medicine over the course of the day and the night, not having to wake up in the middle of the night. There are different forms of morphine. A common sort of half-brother or sister to morphine, hydromorphone, also a short-acting medicine that is not available in the United States in a long-acting form but is available in other parts of the world, can be quite good at treating both the a variety of the types of medicines that Dr. Kuo talked about, particularly those that are incident pain or those that are from tissue damage itself. There are other medicines, again, depending upon where you live, an old-fashioned one that we sometimes use when people have gone through a variety of other medicines and they need to be switched from time to time, or the other ones haven't helped. Levodromaran can be, you know, quite helpful as well. There's a method to the way we go about the choice as well as the change from one pain medicine to another. A usual method is to really start out on a short-acting medicine, to keep a good log, as Nessa said, and see how many doses you need over a period of a few days in a row. And then based upon that usage, your clinician can change you to a longer-acting pain medicine that's pretty much equivalent to the number of short-acting doses that you used, so you're not tied to your watch or to a clock. You don't have to watch all day and have to remember, when do I take my next dosage, because that can certainly interfere with your quality of life during the time of your cancer treatment. Another sort of a pharmacologic trick or a drug trick that we use is to use other medicines that help the opioids along so that we can reduce the total number of milligrams that a person needs by using other medicines. And those medicines, again, usually come with a public relations problem because they were generally approved in the United States by the FDA and in other countries by similar government bodies for other conditions, many of which are either seizures or convulsions or epilepsy or as antidepressants. And people feel so much stigmatized sometimes that we ask them to take a medicine for epilepsy or for depression when that's not what they're suffering from. But these medicines can often mean that you're on less number of milligrams of the short and long-acting opioid medicines and suffer with less side effects and be able to take them over the long haul by improving quality of life. But there's a logical progression to how we go from one to the other and how we add and subtract adjuvants. It's interesting that at some point for people who are on pain medicines for a long period of time, as time goes by, we will actually switch from one family to another. There's a theory that you can, again, use less medicine over a long period of time and have much more relief. So there really is a logical progression to this. It shouldn't be, well, I'll try this because that's the last salesman that I saw. I'll try this because that's the advertisement I saw in a medical journal. But really going through a stepwise, logical way of going from one drug to another and using the minimum amount that's going to help. The side effects are, of course, something that we really want to try to avoid. The side effects that were mentioned before are pretty much the main ones. Drowsiness or sleepiness is somewhat universal and generally temporary, goes away as time goes by. We have successfully been able to manage that with a variety of techniques, like a good nap, a short nap so that your body doesn't think you've fallen into a deep sleep. It's kind of like having permanent jet lag if you nap a long time every day. Or using stimulant medicine, which again, in the United States, has a whole other set of myths that go along with it. But that can be quite helpful in having our patients have adequate pain relief and not be so sleepy during the daytime. Many people say that they get cognitively impaired. They can't remember the things as well as they would off of the medicines, where they put their keys, phone numbers, people's names. But again, that's something that generally happens at the beginning, if it happens at all, or at the time of a change of dose, and generally is not permanent throughout the whole time that people are taking pain medicines. Constipation is pretty much universal. It's a good idea, again, to think preventively here, and for your clinician, when you're starting on the stronger opioid medicines, to anticipate this and start out with, again, depending upon your own situation, extra fluid, higher fiber, sometimes even fiber supplements, stool softeners, not laxatives, but softeners that draw more water into the stool to allow the stool to pass through without straining. Again, different names in different countries. Docosate or Colace is something we use in the United States. I've learned from our colleagues in Italy that some whole grain bread dipped in olive oil is a wonderful way to get some of the same effects, and it certainly is much more tastier than taking another medicine. But stool softeners as a preventive measure is really important. We then add in laxatives. Some laxatives are a little easier on the system. They're all a bit irritating in the colon, which is how they work. We start with the ones that are a little less irritating, and we build up to the stronger and stronger ones, again, through a logical chain, not just randomly. And we can generally anticipate as well as treat the constipation problems that happen from pain medicine, so people don't have to give up their pain medicines and be in pain and be suffering in that way. Nausea is a problem, also generally transitory. Many people are already taking anti-nausea medicines, anti-emetic medicines because of their chemotherapy or maybe because of their radiation therapy, and that can be coordinated so that they help with the type of nausea from chemotherapy. They can generally help with the nausea that comes with opioid pain medicines, but again, there's some slight variations, and working with your team is really, really important. So the sleepiness or the sedation, the drowsiness, the constipation, and the nausea are all things that we really can work with and can usually get around. It does mean, though, that it violates kind of one of the general myths out there is, you know, we try to have people cut down on the number of medicines they take, but here we're using a medicine for an effective cancer or an effective treatment, a pain medicine, and then we're using other medicines to counteract the effects of that medicine. And to some people, that's counterintuitive and doesn't make sense, but in our world, that really is the way to maximize quality of life and to make sure that people get through their treatment and then heal and recover after treatment as well as can be. The effects on quality of life in general, we've certainly been alluding to, but it's important to remember a number of things that Nessa said, that the way this affects your everyday life, your sleep, your mood, how it affects what you can do when you're functioning or functioning with your family at work, and even keeping you from the things that give you enjoyment is a big impact on your life. And we need to make sure that you're getting good care and that we're working with the way you live your life rather than just a sort of a rote recipe of the kinds of pain strategies that we have. A classic example is somebody who works nights and needs to be up at night and not during the day, and we have to adjust our recipes to exactly how somebody lives their life, but that's really, really important. The other thing that I'd like to stress before I stop is that pain treatment is part of a larger world of symptom management. And as we spoke about before, that doesn't rob from the focus on your cancer treatment. But most larger cancer centers or most oncologists in the community do have a pain specialist or a palliative care specialist that they can call in to help you and to help them give you the best treatment without losing focus on your cancer treatment. So sometimes calling in a consultant here is really a good idea, and those consultants are often an integral component of the whole team, many of the people behind the scenes that you've never met, that will help guide the medical oncologist, surgical oncologist, or radiation oncologist in your care. I'm going to stop here so we can stay on schedule.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Fleischman, for an excellent presentation, always compassionate, and also giving lots of tips in terms of really how to cope with the side effects of pain management and also just very specific issues in terms of how to really manage one's pain. So thank you very much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next and last speaker before we take questions is Glenn Muche. And Glenn is an oncology social worker, and he is our pain services program coordinator at Cancer Care. And he's going to talk to you a bit about Cancer Care services that you can access. And I'm going to turn the program over to Glenn.
Okay, thank you, Carolyn. I would like to thank everyone for participating in today's telephone education workshop. In closing, I would like to speak briefly about the services that Cancer Care offers. Cancer care can present many challenges, which can feel overwhelming at times and impact our quality of life. We may often find ourselves faced with many questions and decisions that have to be made insofar as pain management is concerned. Sometimes we may not even know where to ask for help, but help is available. Cancer Care is one such organization that can offer support. Cancer Care provides free individual counseling from professional oncology social workers who can walk with you and provide a listening ear. A Cancer Care social worker can help you sort through the myriad of issues that may surround coping with cancer pain. Social workers can open doors and offer ways to help you communicate your concerns about pain management. They can also direct you to other resources and afford you guidance as you navigate through the sometimes complex system of health care. The cancer experience can also leave us feeling all alone. Support groups can lessen these feelings of isolation and help us cope. They provide a safe and supportive environment where we can not only share our cancer story with others, but learn from those who may be experiencing similar feelings and concerns as well. At Cancer Care, people can gain emotional support, insight, and reassurance by participating in free telephone and online support groups. Cancer Care offers these support groups to people with cancer, their families and friends, caregivers, survivors, and the bereaved. A cancer diagnosis can present a person with economic burdens as well. Financial assistance is available from Cancer Care. Cancer Care can help reduce the costs associated with transportation to and from treatment, home care, child care, and in some instances for pain medications related to a person's cancer and treatment. In addition to this, a Cancer Care social worker can point you to other resources in your community that may offer financial assistance. So with that, I'll turn the program back over to Carolyn and Dr. Coyle and Dr. Fleischman.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Glenn, for an excellent presentation. And we now do have time for questions. We actually have lots of time for questions. So I want to thank our speakers for really making that possible. And I'm going to ask Mary to explain to you how to queue up for questions. And we're going to take as many of your questions as possible. Mary?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Teresa.
Hi. Hi, Teresa. Your question.
My question is, I am stage 4 breast cancer metastatic, and I'm on a fentanyl patch to help with the pain in my liver. However, from being on Taxol 4 years ago, I have arthritis in my sacrum iliac SI joints, and I was wondering if there's anything that can be done for that. I was on Celebrex, and that was wonderful until the cancer spread to my liver, and I had to go off that. And I did get a shot in my back, but that didn't last that long. And now my platelets are on the low side, so my doctor's very hesitant about me getting any kind of injections. Is there anything that can be suggested?
Okay, well, Teresa, thank you for your question. Now, I'm going to ask our speakers to address your question in a general way because, of course, they are unable to provide you with a personal consult, and then we hope you'll take that information back to your treating healthcare team. Dr. Fleischman, do you want to start?
Well, actually, Nessa had given you the answer buried in her talk, actually. Liver pain is generally not from the liver itself, but from the capsule that surrounds the liver. And I would ask your doctor if any of the corticosteroids or the cortisone medicines that you can take by mouth, even for a few period of a short period of time on, off, may be helpful to you. That may help with both the liver pain from the capsule as well as the arthritic pain.
Dr. Coyle, did you want to add to that?
The only thing that I would add is sometimes some gentle physical therapy or occupational therapy is helping you to move in certain ways can be enormously helpful. And so that's another thing that I would just consider, and you may be having that already, so that sometimes some of these approaches like physical therapy, specifically designed for you and your pain issue and the level of your disease in combination with the drugs, the analgesic drugs that have been suggested.
Thank you. Excellent. And Teresa, I hope this is useful to you and you can, again, bring it back to your treating healthcare team. Our next question?
Our next question comes from Mildred F.
Yes. What about laxative suppositories, over-the-counter or otherwise?
Dr. Fleischman?
Well, laxative suppositories are part of what we have in our bag of tricks to try to keep your bowels moving when you're constipated, either from the cancer or the chemotherapy or treatment. Radiation generally gives you diarrhea, not constipation, if it's into the colon area. But that's again, fine in general. Specifically, just need to work with your team to make sure that you're not losing too much fluid, that you understand the schedule. They work rather quickly sometimes, so you need to use a laxative when you're near a bathroom and going to be home for a few hours. But that's an absolutely fine member of one of the things that we recommend for constipation from pain medicine.
Excellent. Our next question?
Our next question comes from Teresa.
Hello, Teresa. Did you have a question?
Yes. I've been on chemotherapy, and I've had radiation, which made me very ill, and I've had to take a lot of medicines for that. Now that I've had a lot of different PET scans and bone density tests, and now they're saying that I need to take Reclast, and I was wondering if that's going to be healthy enough for me.
And did you have some pain as well that you wanted to ask about?
The pain that I had from the radiation. I had lymphoma cancer that was operated on several months ago.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Teresa, for your question. Dr. Coyle, can you address that in a general way?
I think, I'll address the pain specifically. So that the sort of questions that I would ask if I was seeing you, I'd ask for for you to describe your pain and see what words you used, like sharpshooting. If it was that sort of pain, I'd think of nerve injury pain. Or if you were having burning in your hands and feet, again, I'd think of nerve injury pain. And I might, as Dr. Fleischman suggested, if you were on opioid drugs and that wasn't enough to manage the pain, then I would probably introduce some of the co-analgesics, again, like the antidepressants or anticonvulsants. So I think really understanding, I'd ask you a series of questions, the ones I went over before, try and get a sense of whether the pain medication you were taking now was working, decreasing your pain by 50%, worked for X number of hours, but then the pain started to break through before you were due for your next medication. I would sort all of those things out. So the way you described your pain, if it was chronic pain and acute episodes on that chronic pain, and the word descriptors you used to describe your pain, and then based on that, with you, I would come up with a management approach, both with medications, analgesics, and also to see if there were other, again, physical therapy type approaches that would be helpful.
You know, I think, Teresa, your question really makes me realize we haven't covered the concept of many institutions, many of the comprehensive centers have a pain service. Actually, both of our speakers have those affiliations, and I wondered if Dr. Coyle and Dr. Fleischman could speak briefly about the benefit of sometimes having a consultation at a pain service.
I'll start then. It's an enormously helpful. I'm part of the Pain and Palliative Care Service, and we work with people early on in their disease process or later on in their disease process. And we're called in if there's a particular, if pain or other symptoms are difficult to control or their oncologist doesn't feel that he or she has the necessary expertise to manage this particular symptom. And then we're called in, and it's a team approach, and we follow the individual to bring their symptom under control, and then if necessary, follow them in our outpatient clinic also, pain and palliative care clinic.
Yeah, I think that sums it up. I'll just mention one more thing, an item in your question. You mentioned something called reclast. That's something I did leave out just because of a time factor. But reclast in the United States is a brand name for one of the bisphosphonate drugs, which actually are used for non-cancer reasons to strengthen bones in menopause or andropause, the kind of hormone slowdown that men have but don't often talk about. There is a lot of belief that the reclast can actually help decrease bone pain if the cancer has spread to the bone, or actually may even prevent metastasis to the bone. You mentioned you have lymphoma. That doesn't directly apply to you, but you mentioned reclast. And in the United States, we're still getting used to direct marketing from the pharmaceutical industry directly to our patients through television and radio and newspaper ads. And generally, people ask about the newest drug, but there are many other drugs in that category, too.
Excellent. So I hope that helps, Teresa. Thank you for your excellent questions. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Jessica.
Hi. I'd like to ask the panel what you think the most pressing research questions are that need to be addressed to prevent and manage chronic cancer pain.
Great question, Jessica. That's a very good question. Dr. Coyle, would you like to start?
It's at different levels. I mean, one area where there's a lot of research going on right now is in genetics, and to see how someone's individual genetic makeup affects the way how they respond to particular pain medications. And if one could understand that, then we wouldn't have to go through sometimes a series of medications to get the right one for that person. So that area of research is certainly in progress now, but it's a very important area of research. And then the next area of research, I think, is how you can integrate pain assessment and management into a chronic disease model in a way that's accepted by the clinician, so it becomes second nature.
Excellent. Thank you. Dr. Fleischman, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I agree. I think that the personalized approach to medicine is happening in all the subspecialties, and pain management and cancer is certainly no exception. We may actually be somewhat ahead of the pack because of the types of advances that have happened in other areas of cancer. I think that in addition to those two areas, which I would really list as one and two myself, finding better ways to give medicine so we can give lower doses over longer periods of time, pure medicines with less side effects. I do think that that's something we need to do as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question?
Our next question comes from Debbie.
Hi. We're wondering about the use of Relistor injections for people, especially chronic or fragile hospice patients with opioid-induced constipation.
Thank you for that question. Dr. Fleischman?
Well, it's a relatively new approach. It certainly has been proven through clinical trials to be effective. I'm not sure I would advise that at first. I would go through the usual things that we mentioned at first and building up from the sort of the least noxious way drugs, using, you know, up the ladder, as we say, up the constipation ladder. But it, you know, it certainly has its place if you've been through the other things and it's just not working. It's a way to be able to take your pain medicine and still not be constipated.
These are wonderful questions. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Michelle L.
Yes, I'm wondering, I'm having a lot of difficulty finding medication that helps with neuropathy pain. And I wonder if you have any suggestions. I've been on Neurontin for some time, along with Tramadol, and just recently started taking Lyrica to see if that would make any difference. So I'm wondering if you have any other suggestions.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful. That is a question, of course, I think that many people on the call are wondering about. And I just want to let you know that we have done programs specifically on neuropathy. We are planning to do one before June 30th of this year on neuropathy, so stay tuned. But I want to have our speakers today address your specific question. Dr. Coyle, could you start?
Neuropathic pain, the neuropathy that you're describing, can be more difficult than the somatic or visceral type pain to manage. The questions, again, I would ask, would be helpful to me to know some of the qualities of that pain and the distribution of the pain. Certainly the Lyrica is a drug that we use very commonly. We also use the opioid drugs, so that we would use some of the opioid drugs that Dr. Fleischman had talked about in combination with a drug like Lyrica. I'm almost like a physical therapist, but physical therapy can make an enormous difference to this type of pain too. It can be very helpful. If the area of pain is a very defined area, then we sometimes use a specific patch, a local anesthetic patch, which is on for 12 hours and taken off for 12 hours. So it's really a combined approach that one would use.
Excellent. And Dr. Fleischman, did you want to add anything?
Yeah. I second the motion. I'd like to add that there are some other medicines that are out there. There's a medicine that is not approved for neuropathy from cancer, but neuropathy from diabetes, called Cymbalta. In full disclosure, I must say I'm a co-investigator using this drug for neuropathic pain in women who have been treated for breast cancer who have taken Taxol, any of the taxanes. And we don't know yet if it's really going to be useful in that type of chronic pain after treatment for breast cancer, but there is now an open trial through the National Cancer Institute to find that out. However, because it is approved by the Food and Drug Administration for neuropathy from diabetes, it's often used and certainly has a place. Again, something to ask your treatment team about and see if it's the right for you or not.
Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Yeah, hi. How you all?
Hi. Your question, please.
My question is from lower bone pain in the back, my lower back. I had shingles about 9 years ago, and I still have pain from it. If I put calamine lotion on it, and it hurts sometimes just to touch it. And nothing. I take Celebrex for my legs, mm-hmm. and I take Tylenol, with codeine for my overall body pain. But I constantly have this lower back pain every day.
And Mary, what type of cancer do you have?
I have multiple myeloma.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your question. I'm going to ask our speakers to try to address it in a general way, and then I'm hoping you can get some help that you can then go back to your treating healthcare team with. Dr. Coyle, would you like to start with this one?
I think actually let me hand it over to Fleischman because I've been having the first one and I'll do the follow-up.
Okay. Dr.
Very
Fleischman,
generous.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. We're good friends. The pain that is sometimes, it's not the majority of people, but a minority of people who have shingles have pain left over that can last for a long period of time. And that is the kind of pain that actually would be classified as neuropathic pain that Dr. Cole talked about. And it sometimes responds to all those other medicines, the medicines that are used to treat convulsions or epilepsy or the antidepressant medicines. And I would go back to your treating team and see if they can help with this or have you referred to a pain specialist in the area who may have more experience. But that is a generally persistent type of pain in a small number of people that can really respond well to medicines that aren't just the kind they use for arthritis like the Celebrex.
The only thing that I would add is because the most important thing is to understand the cause of the pain. And if it's in your back, and I would just want to be sure from your treating team that that it's the nerve damage type pain and not another sort of pain, because the management would be different. So again, if the way the pain is different, if the site is different, or if the word descriptors you would use to describe it are different, then you need to let your treating team know, because there may be another form of treatment which would work better for you.
So we really want your team, Mary, to really assess your entire situation, both your myeloma, the pain
right.
that you're having, the fact that you'd had shingles, to really do a total revisit of some of these complaints that you're having and really assess them very carefully. And actually, Mary, I'd be happy to talk with you after the call, just so that we can just go over this in more detail. You raised some very, very important questions.
Because I think what can happen is that someone assumes that they know the cause of their pain.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's changed in any way, then it's important that it's reassessed.
Excellent. These are great questions, great speakers. Our next question.
Our next question comes from Pauline.
I would like to know, what do you do about cancer pain when actually you're not having a pain? I don't have the pain every day. And I would like to know, should I take the medication when I'm not in pain?
And what type of cancer do you have, Pauline, if I ask?
What kind of what?
What type of cancer do you have?
A breast cancer.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Dr. Fleischman, could you address that?
Yeah. Again, we didn't have a chance to fully discuss this in the presentations, but you may not have pain every day because the pain medicine is working part of the days that you don't have pain. So cutting down may not be the solution. It may be that your treatment team can help you figure out what to take when the pain is bad. Keep track of that. Keep a log. Figure out if there's a pattern, as Nessa said, what makes it better, what makes it worse, what time of day, exactly where it starts, does it travel, and then come up with a better solution. Sometimes pain just comes and goes, and then that often doesn't require long-acting medicines. That requires you to judicious use of short-acting medicines. So, again, bringing this information back to your treatment team and having them take a full look and ask all those questions really makes the most sense.
And just because your pain comes and goes, is there other things that maybe could activities or things that could trigger pain that people don't think about that would be important to keep in mind as you're keeping a log?
Yeah, I mean, I think that exactly when you're keeping a log about the level of your pain when it's coming on, you need to indicate what you're doing. So if you were lying in bed and then you sit up and are getting out of bed and that's when the pain comes each time, that's important information. Or if it comes just sort of spontaneously out of the blue and you have no idea what's bringing it on, or if you've had this pain for a very long time and perhaps it pre-existed your cancer history. So, again, remember that some pain can be associated with other things like arthritis, rheumatism, low chronic back pain unrelated to your cancer or its treatment. So, again, I would need to sort those things out.
We had seen someone in the office here a few weeks ago who had breast cancer many years ago and started to have pain and was worried that the cancer came back. None of the x-rays and the imaging showed that it did, but her purse was really heavy, and she was wearing it over her shoulder. Sometimes it's practical things like that that can also make a difference once the big picture is looked at.
That is a very good point. That's an excellent point that people often are carrying around such heavy things, and we just take it as part of the day-to-day life. So these are, that type of assessment, and I guess someone noticed that, actually. So be sure when you see your doctor, you often have all your clothes taken off, you put on a robe, and they don't see what you came in with. Be sure that somebody sees you as you come in with all the things that you're carrying, or your heavy coats and all those things.
If I could make just one other point, and that is, again, when you go in to see your doctor on a regular basis, often your doctor has an agenda for he or the doctor may have specific things they want to cover in this visit, and your agenda may be very different. So it's a good idea to write down the things that are really bothering you so that you can bring that up, because the doctor may not even initiate that conversation, and in a way you're out of the door before you realize that what was really bothering you has not been addressed.
Oh, that's such an important point. Glenn, I wondered if you want to comment on that in terms of the...
Yeah, I just wanted to, to reinforce what Dr. Coyle and Dr. Fleischman shared, is I always encourage people to inform their doctors of course, when they experience pain, but it's just as important to inform them when you're not experiencing pain. Very often when we think about pain management, we think about it in terms of, well, if I'm experiencing pain. But pain management should be discussed, and it should be, any concerns or questions you have should be addressed, regardless of whether or not you're experiencing pain.
Okay, excellent. Well, I want to thank our speakers who've been absolutely excellent and very knowledgeable, very expert, but also very compassionate in giving you all kinds of tips and information. I want to thank our audience, all of you who've asked such terrific questions, and those of you who've been listening as well. I know that you ask questions to hopefully get information that will help you specifically, but also when you're asking the question, you end up helping everybody on the call, because your question allows the speakers to elaborate further on a point that you may raise. I want to remind you that this is a one-hour education program, and that we recognize in planning a program like this that your needs go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. So with that in mind, I too would like to just conclude by saying that you have access now to lots of services at Cancer Care, and please take advantage of them. Those services are free, and we have 60 master's level trained oncology social workers, and they're here to provide you with a host of services, from just someone to talk to, so individual counseling, to practical and financial assistance, so help sometimes with the cost of your transportation to treatment, help with your home care needs. So lots of practical and financial assistance is very important very often. We also assist with support groups, both telephone and online support groups, and many people find those very helpful. And we also have lots of telephone workshops. You have a schedule of upcoming programs in your materials. And we also, of course, have publications that we offer as well, a lot of written materials and fact sheets that you have access to. So most importantly, as we conclude today's program, I would not want anyone to feel you're alone in trying to cope with your cancer pain, or the pain that you're experiencing. I want you to now feel you're part of a community of support, and we really are simply a telephone call away. 1-800-813-HOPE is our telephone number. Please do call us. Our website is www.cancercare.org. And I can't stress enough how important it is to call us for support and to not feel that you have to do everything all by yourself. Often in talking with someone, you might get some helpful tips or ideas that could make your life much more manageable. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the program. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.